Pad up. It's the Australian Cricket Podcast. And here are your hosts.
Welcome to the Australian Cricket Podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Mensel. And joining me for this week's episode, I have Scott Bailey, ace sports reporter from AAP. How are you, Bales?
I'm awake. That's probably the best way to put it after a night of Origin last night.
Well, I stole that introduction from our old friend Maccabee, and I can tell you what, that he would not be at a podcast the day after the State of Origin.
Yeah, look, I think my best cricket reference right now would be the fact that I would compare New South Wales to South Africa, just some serious choking. That's about all I've got for cricket after a week and a half of Origin.
Good on you, Bales. Now, we have a special guest this week. Naomi Stallenberg has played one T20 international for the Australian women's cricket team and was part of the Sydney Thunder's title-winning WBBL side from the first Women's Big Bash League. Welcome to the show, Naomi Stallenberg. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. Thank you for having me. It's great
Thanks
to be
so
here.
Much for coming on. Are you aware that I'm a Sixers fan, though?
Oh, it's okay. I'll let it go.
Good. You're actually replacing Lisa Stelaker, who was an ex-Sixers player. So we're evening things up now.
It's all right. She's in commentary now. She's in a good place.
Yeah, she's over in the Women's World Cup. Now, this is a special show. Because we've got Naomi here, we're going to be previewing the Women's World Cup, and then we're also going to have a bit of a chat with Naomi about her experiences on the women's domestic scene. But before we get into all that, I just wanted to touch on the Australian squad to Bangladesh that was announced. So, Bales, I'm going to start with you. The current travel status for civilians to go to Bangladesh is that the Department of Foreign Affairs say that you should reconsider travel to Bangladesh, which means there are serious and potentially life-threatening threats that make the destination unsafe for tourism and unsuitable for most travellers. So, Bales, do you think this Australian team is going to go with, if that's the message from the Department of Foreign Affairs?
Yeah, I mean, if history's anything to go by, it's probably looking less likely that they will go based on that alone. You know, if the Department of Foreign Affairs is recommending that Australians avoid travelling there, then it's safe to say that the Australian cricket team certainly falls into that model. And I guess it's not just the Australian cricket team too. There's all the support staff that go around that. Travelling media, I could potentially be one of the ones heading there. You know, from that end, it's...
We're not worried about you as much.
Well, I know, I
Let's
am.
Be honest. Well, Nick Steve Smith and David Warner.
I was just thinking, I might have to hide that
more valuable.
Time is money, Scotty.
But I think it's probably looking less likely from that angle that they will be heading there.
Yeah, I agree. I think the announcement of the squad was a little bit of a show. It's all about doing the right things to appease the world. After England went there and played some one-day cricket last year, I think they have to show the intention to go to make the rest of the world happy. What do you think, Naomi? Would you go to a place like that right now?
Well, I think with a lot of the things happening around the world at the moment, I think the world can be a scary place wherever you go. So I think if they're going to a place like Bangladesh where there has been history of problems before, I think they will probably be quite hesitant. I think it's disappointing that that's a fact, you know, that Bangladesh is missing out on a good showcase of cricket.
And they're doing so well as well.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, with the way that cricket's going, you know, it's growing every single day. I think it's disappointing, but I think they do have to have... ensure a lot of safety for their players. So if they're not going to go, then I think that's the best option.
Yeah, exactly. And with that squad that was announced, there's a couple of notable exclusions. Mitchell Starc is out due to injury. Stephen O'Keefe has been left out. Both Marshes haven't been selected. And Marcus Stoinis, who was the late all-rounder for the Indian Tour, is not there. Included, James Pattinson comes back into the squad after taking 28 wickets at an average of just above 10 in his current county stint. And you've also got Hilton Cartwright, who has come back into the squad after being picked for the last test of the summer against Pakistan. I guess, do you guys have any problems with the squad that's been announced?
The way they've rested Mitch Starc, because it was noted that, you know, he's obviously got some issues ahead of the Ashes, but, you know, he'll play the Indian one-day series. For mine, that's a concern that they're prioritising an Indian one-day series ahead of a test series. I mean, test cricket is the pinnacle of our sport. You know, I don't think Australia is in a position where you can tank Bangladesh lightly. I mean, we have...
Well, I think it's more an issue about Starc's fitness. But then, I mean, if he's still got this recurring foot problem, then it's something that we're going to have to manage, and he's the leader of our attack.
But why are we saying we'll rest you for a test series, but we'll happily play you in a one-day series against India? I know there's less workload in one-day cricket.
But the one-days are after the test series, so that extra time might allow him to get better.
There's an argument there's extra time between the rest between Bangladesh and the start of the Ashes series, but isn't there?
I guess.
I don't know. But having said that, it's a good opportunity to see Cummins, Pattinson and Hazelwood together. That's something we haven't had a chance to see, and that's certainly very exciting.
Hilton Cartwright's an interesting one. He's definitely got the credentials as a batsman. As a young, explosive, top-order batsman, he seems to have it, but his bowling is the concern for me. I don't know if he's actually a test all-rounder. I think he might be more a batsman that could bowl you just a few overs if you really need it.
Is Smith going to use him? Like, let's say he plays and bats six. Would he bowl anyway? I mean, we saw with Smith over the summer and in India that we pick an all-rounder, let's say, at number six, and they're not bowling anyway. So what difference does it make? We're better off picking our best number six batsman. If Hilton Cartwright fits that mould, then, yeah, he deserves his spot in the team, but not as an all-rounder.
He was second on the Shield run scorers last summer, and he now averages over 50 at first-class level. So Hilton Cartwright's got the credentials. Did you see him over summer, Naomi?
Yeah, I watched a fair bit of the highlights from a lot of the Shield games, and I liked what I saw. I think he was pretty unlucky with in and out of the Australian team. But, you know, if he's gotten the opportunity in this upcoming tour, then I think that's great for him. If he's there as an all-rounder, my personal opinion, I think all-rounders win games. So if that's...
Why is that?
I just think if you've got some of the best all-rounders in the world, then you're going to come out on top if they can
do... It does give you depth, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, if looking at the squad, I'm pretty sure that everyone in this team can bat all the way down to, you know, number 12. So I think it's great that they're trying to pick those kind of players, because if you've got the choice between a three-dimensional player compared to a two, then you're going to probably pick that three for that extra option.
People are talking about James Pattinson's batting, giving him rave reviews lately, hinting that he could bat as high as six or seven in a first-class or test lineup, which I think might be a bit high. But it goes to your point, Naomi, that if you have depth in your batting order, it allows more flexibility. I still think Marcus Stoinis was very unlucky to miss out on this squad, because I think his bowling is better than Hilton Cartwright's. And I think if you go to Bangladesh, you want that number six to be able to bowl a few medium paces and, as you say, give depth and flexibility to the captain. So I think he was unlucky. What do you think of Stoinis, Bales?
Yeah, I think his bowling would have suited Bangladeshi conditions as well. So it would have been interesting. But having said that, I guess that he still hasn't had a crack at Test cricket, so it's hard to judge. But what we've seen, I think, a lot, even in your point, I know you spoke a lot about Moses Enriquez last week, and it's completely different, but, you know, his performance in the Champions Trophy, but, you know, he's got such a great record for New South Wales. We're seeing that Sheffield Shield standing probably isn't what it was 15 years ago, 20 years ago. We know it's not what it was. So therefore, players who are excelling at domestic level and doing well at Shield level aren't necessarily going to succeed straight away at international level. So we haven't really got a guise on what Marcus Stoinis is, I guess, at Test level yet.
I just think he's batting at the top of the order for Victoria. He's bowling first or second change. He just seems to have a little bit more bowling skill than Cartwright. One player we didn't touch on was Stephen O'Keefe. He was left out after having a fairly successful tour to India. I mean, that's a big surprise for me.
It's a sign of, well, obviously, Stephen O'Keefe's
had Ashton Agar's come in.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, Stephen O'Keefe's had some issues in the last 6 months, which we spoke about before, but it's a sign of, I guess, Cricket Australia in some ways looking to the future with Ashton Agar coming in. I mean, he's by far a younger option. There are a couple. I think we go to Pakistan in a year and a half, or sorry, Dubai in a year and a half to play Pakistan. So maybe they're starting to look forward to that next cycle now, and whether Stephen O'Keefe would still be, you know, I guess, young enough for that tour in a year and a half's time.
Naomi, have you seen Socky around, apart from at the presentation night?
I actually haven't seen him since. Yeah, I haven't seen him in the office at all, so...
He's laying pretty low at the moment.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure if he's allowed to be around, to be honest, so...
Oh, there you go. Well, I just think it's very strange, apart from all off-field stuff, that someone that was able to give Smith a lot of control against India. He was able to keep the runs down, bowl a lot of overs, has been ditched for a tour of the subcontinent. So I just think it's a peculiar decision.
It would have been weird, you know, looking from the PC sort of angle, it would have been weird for them to pick him for Bangladesh when he's still suspended for... And I know that was a cricket...
But Hones didn't say that. That's the problem. No. Hones came out and said it was about cricket. Now, come out and say, look, he's suspended for New South Wales. He wasn't considered for selection. Be transparent. But they're saying, you know, you can't have double jeopardy. You can't be...
Yeah.
So... anyway, so that's big controversy. On next week's show, we are going to go through all the news items. I've got a couple of journos in, so we'll go into depth with a few of those things. But now I want to move on to the Women's World Cup. A very exciting event is about to start this weekend. Australia go in as favourite, so I guess we're all pretty excited about Australia perhaps winning back-to-back Women's World Cups. But I want to start with something that I wouldn't say it's mad manners, but it's slightly mad manners, because I was listening to another podcast, The Analyst, with Simon Hughes and Simon Mann, and they displayed something which I think comes across a lot, and I want to ask Naomi about this. It's kind of a sort of a condescension towards women's cricket. They sort of said that women's cricket contrasts to men's cricket, and that everyone's so nice and the camaraderie so strong, and I just don't know if that's true. When I've been around the women's teams, they seem to me the same as men's teams. I can't see any difference. Can you, Naomi?
Well, these people saying that women's cricket is nice, have they ever played women's cricket?
Yeah.
If it's a male's point of view, then they actually haven't put themselves in that kind of environment. So I think it is a bit strange, I think, if they're making those kind of statements.
They weren't too bad. I don't want to throw those guys under the bus, because it's an example of that sort of underlying condescension. And I think what I've seen is the women's crickets are just as competitive, and I'm sure within the team it's just like any men's team. You have players that get on, you have rivalries, you push each other along.
Yeah, well, coming from New South Wales, I think everyone is always trying to be the best, and they're trying to be the best for themselves, and there are some at moments you're competing for a spot in the team just to play for your state, and I think that's good. If you're playing in a competitive state, then you're going to bring out the best in everyone. So if that's the way it's going to be, that we're going to create really good cricket.
And it's fierce on the field, isn't it?
Yeah, I was going to say, Naomi's probably a better place to answer, but having spent a fair bit of time around women's cricket and covering a bit of women's cricket, there's plenty of rivalries there. I mean, maybe it doesn't get the same hype as a Smith v. Virat Kohli kind of thing, but there's plenty of people who don't like each other. I mean, I don't imagine why name people that don't like each other, but that would be right, wouldn't it, Naomi?
Yeah, well, you wouldn't want to step on the wrong toes of anyone. I think, especially going up against certain players, if someone doesn't like you, they're probably going to tell you. And I think that's the way sport should be. Mm. You're always going to get a good rivalry. We've always got a good chat with Queensland whenever we play against them. So I think that's great. It's competitiveness in that sport.
And that's what I think it's really going to come out in this upcoming World Cup, is the fiercely competitiveness of the international teams now, and a really high standard of cricket, and an improvement since the last World Cup. So to all those people over there that think it's all tea and scones for women's cricket, it certainly isn't. In great news, Fox Sports will be broadcasting all of Australia's pool matches live, plus the semi-finals and finals. In a first for women's cricket, some of the matches will feature DRS, the Decision Review System. That's fantastic. The prize money has increased tenfold, from a $200,000 total prize fund to a $2 million total prize fund. So we're seeing a huge growth in the women's game. Is that something, as a female player, that you noticed, Naomi?
Oh, of course. It's in our conversations, I think, all the time, and it's something that we have something to work for now. I think we've always had something to work for. To win a World Cup is, you know, the pinnacle, it's the dream. But to be recognised from the ICC, as female cricketers and female athletes, I think it's really special. And for them to be, you know, investing in our achievements, I think that's great as well. So, you know, it's only going to get bigger and better from here.
A big boost for you, I guess.
Yeah, it's going
to
be great. You're
coming along at the right time. I would like to see, actually, DRS come into the Big Bash and the Women's Big Bash next summer. As a WBBL player, would you like to see a DRS in those big games?
Yeah, I think so. But I do think that DRS may take away from the umpire's role on the field. I think that they do quite a good job. There are a few decisions that obviously can be a little bit controversial, and it could determine whether it's a win or a loss. And I think that's hard, but that's cricket, and the umpires are there to do a job. And I think they're working really hard to keep the umpires on their toes and really improve the level that they're at.
That's interesting, actually.
It's a tricky one because, like, the competitor in me, not that I play this that level, but the competitor in me says, well, you always want the right decisions, and you want the right team to win, so therefore there should be DRS. And we saw the Sixers were very strong on that following their semi-final win over the Heat, from memory, in the last Big Bash. But then at the same time, I think the appeal of the Big Bash, whether it's WBBL or the BBL, is that you get people going to games who aren't necessarily cricket fanatics like us. And, you know, the game slowing down for 3 minutes while there's a decision isn't what they want or need. Like, I know that when I look at the success of the Big Bash, I look at people who go to games who aren't cricket fans and what that's doing for our sport. I just imagine the whinging that we'd get for 3 to 5 minutes or 3 minutes of hotspot and this and that. And I don't think they care. I don't think they care if the ball pitches in line with the stumps or not.
I just think the runouts is a big thing. If it's a close call and a run out and it's make or break, I think that's where, you know, go to the third umpire. But DRS, I don't think it's quite necessary for such a quick game.
You guys don't have third umpire for most of your WBBL games, do you?
Not for the live stream ones. For any televised game, we do.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, there's only so many, so.
There'll be more, don't worry.
Yeah, sure.
Now, for the Women's World Cup, it's a great format. It's an 8-team round-robin competition, so they all play each other once, and then the top four go through to the semi-finals. The 8 competing nations are Australia, England, New Zealand, Pakistan, South Africa, India, Sri Lanka, and the West Indies. I like this round-robin format. They're now making the Men's World Cup in 2019 a 10-team round-robin format. Bales, do you like that change?
Yeah, I mean,
The criticism is they're not allowing as many smaller nations in. But as a format for finding the best team, a round-robin does seem to do that.
Yeah, my personal preference is actually going back to what we had back in 99 for the men's, which is the Super 6 stage. But anyway, they're not going to go there. So I see you roll your eyes. You didn't like that at all.
No, I was in England for the 99 World Cup. Fond memories.
But my issue with that is, with this format, is you could have some really dead games towards the back end of it. And I know you get that with any round-robin format, but I can just imagine, you know, I don't want to be rude to any of these teams, maybe like a Sri Lanka v Pakistan not exactly producing a great game towards the end of the tournament because it's 6 v 7th and really, who cares?
Yeah, I just think it allows the cream to rise to the top. What do you think, Naomi? Do you like it?
Well, I agree having perhaps Sri Lanka and Pakistan being able to compete at that level. You know, I've played against Sri Lanka and they've got potential to be, you know, a good team in the future. And I think having them there playing against the best teams in the world, you know, the likes of England, New Zealand, West Indies, who have some of the best players in the world, you know, aside from Australia, for them to be playing against those teams and those players, I think it's an incredible journey for them.
It's so, growing the women's game
and
as well.
It provides potential to, you know, tour in those countries. And I think if you're going to bring more out of the country and out of the world, I think that's great.
They're guaranteed 7 games now, aren't they? Whereas under around like a Champions Trophy format,
they get a couple of games and they're going home.
Yeah, that's true.
Bit of bad weather and you're out of it.
Yeah.
Like the Aussies found out.
Yeah.
Now, Australia has dominated the Women's World Cup like they've dominated the Men's World Cup. Australia have won 6 out of the 10 World Cups played. England have won 3 and New Zealand have won 1. This is a very strong Australian squad full of stars, skippered by Meg Lanning. Now, I've looked through the squad and my feeling is it's a really strong batting squad, this Australian squad. Maybe the strongest ever Australian women's team with batting, but the fast bowling may be the only area that could let them down.
Obviously, they've got Belinda Vaccarino to potentially make her debut.
So she's a young New South Wales player, is that correct?
Yes. So I think
Scott Bailey coached junior, might I add too.
Really? Yeah, so well,
she's young,
despite that, she's achieved.
she's a great athlete, and I do think she's got the potential to
Would
to
she
do
be
well.
The quickest in the squad?
I definitely think she's up there with Pez coming back as a bowler after having slight break from bowling. I think she brings the experience, And Megan Short, she's always been a great asset to the team. So, but I think someone to really look out for is definitely Sarah Ailey. I think if they give her the ball, then I think she's got the talent and the drive to, and the passion to really take a game away. So, I don't think their bowling attack is that negative. I think they've got a good variety of different players and.
Great. Yeah. What about Ailey's strength? Is she like a stump to stump? She's a sort of medium quick. Is she sort of a stump to stump bowler, or what sort of style would you say? Does she hit a length?
Yeah, she'll just hit knee roll, I think, and that's her strength. Just hitting that consistent length, and that's what she works for every single training session. And she's one of the hardest working players in the squad. So yeah, I think it's amazing to see her in that squad.
Tell you another player. Amanda Jade Wellington. She's leggy. I remember she made an Australian debut maybe two summers back now.
I just remember actually, her women's big batch thing last summer in the first year. Everyone was raving about female Shane Warne.
Yeah, that's exactly. I was going to say that. Gilly labelled her the female Shane Warne, and she took a wicket with her first ball for Australia up in Coffs Harbour from memory. She's a real talent. She'd only be, was she 19?
About that, I reckon. Yeah, I think 19 or 20.
Yeah, so she's a real talent going forward. Because Kristen Beams would be...
Have you faced Amanda Jade Wellington, Naomi?
Yeah, I've faced her in both WNCL and WBBL.
And do you think she's got it to succeed at international level?
She's actually a player that I enjoy facing. So I think, yeah, she's done well to get herself up to that level. I think they've had their eye on her for a few years and being able to let her enjoy playing a bit of state cricket and the 2020s as well, and for her to be going to a World Cup, I think that's great. And you know, it's good for her to be a leg spinner and following in, say, Beamsy's footsteps, really. So yeah, Beamsy's she's an old, more senior player, so I think for Wellington to be kind of learning from her, that's really great. That's good.
She's very confident, young Wellington, too, isn't she?
Yeah, I definitely think so.
Now, I want to take a quote from James Buckley, who wrote in the Sydney Morning Herald. James is coming on next week. And he wrote that veteran Alex Blackwell has declared Captain Meg Lanning the best batter she has ever seen. She averages over 52 in 57 one-day innings. In those 57 innings, she scored 10 centuries and 10 50s. So, is she the best women's player ever? What do you think, Naomi?
For her to be the Australian captain, she obviously has to lead from the front. And I definitely think she has done that. She's a very good player. She works hard and, man, she hits the ball sweet. So, I think she knows what her strengths are and that's how she scores her runs.
But is she somewhere like when you're out watching a really good player and you're around them and you just go, wow, they just blow your mind away? Is she like that when you're out there and the way she hits the ball and the way she attacks?
Yeah, well, I've always played in a team where we've wanted to get on top of her, and there was a
sledging.
Game.
How does she cope with sledging?
She's not someone that you're going to sledge, I don't think. I think she's probably that person that you'll sledge them and then they'll go on to score 100. But she's just one of those players who will just build their innings and she'll, take a game apart, I think. So she did she scored an impressive 100 for Victoria, three seasons ago that, I played in that game. So it's just one of those things. If she's not getting out, you're not going to get her out. So
yeah, she's amazing. But yeah. I've got a theory. Now, I'm going to throw this both at you, Bales. Mm-hmm. You ready for this one?
I'm ready.
I think, actually, the best batsman in the world is Elise Perry. Now, she started off as a bowler, so her record is tainted by the fact that many of her international innings were as a bowler. But I've just isolated her stats from the year 2013 to now. So in the last 27 one-day internationals, Elise Perry is averaging 87 with the bat. I mean, it's an amazing average. In the same period, Meg Lanning has averaged 58, so it's almost 30 points better. I would actually think that Elise Perry is the best player in the world right now.
It's hard to argue with those stats. I mean, I mean
that's a 4 years of sustained brilliance.
I would argue, and I don't have the figures in front of me, I wish I'd done my research, that that would be higher than anyone in the men's or women's game, to be honest, for the last 4 years of international cricket. See, I always look, when I watch Lanning and Perry bat, I think that, personally, I think that Lanning technically speaking, is a better bat. I mean, they're both wonderful bats, but I always think Lanning's technique is so strong and it's just so correct, whereas Perry hits the ball, I think it's probably to say, probably a bit harder. They're very different kinds of bats, in my opinion.
I think I'd have it around the other
way.
Yeah,
I would have it. Yeah, I think Perry seems to play within herself a bit.
Yeah, I think Pez is by far one of the hardest working batswomen going around. You know, she's hitting balls pretty much every single day. And her technique is just sometimes it's faultless. I watch her bat in the nets and it's, it's just impressive. And then for her to take on, when she takes it out on the field, it's I think she's world class. There's her work ethic is world class.
And is she someone that inspires you and other New South Wales players, seeing the way she's dedicated herself to cricket?
Well, yeah, definitely, especially going out to bat with her is, an honour in itself, especially when you're batting with someone like that. You've got them at the other end and you probably don't feel any pressure at all knowing that she's at the other end with you. And a lot of the time she'll bat an innings out and, end up with a really, really good score. So she is someone that I think everyone looks up to. They have for many years. She's been in the New South Wales squad and the Australian squad for pretty much her whole career. So, she's one of the best. I definitely think she's world class.
So Australia's batting lineup is chock full of stars. Mm-hmm. You've got Lanning, Perry, then you've got Elise Villani. He's got a big century in the lead up.
Yep.
Ashley Gardner, a young New South Wales player. Elisa Healy, who has done so well at the top of the order for the Sixers, your bitter rival, Naomi. Who else have I missed? Alex Blackwell, is she the captain out at the Thunder?
Yeah, I think Alex and Healy, I think they're unlucky to be up the order. But if they've, if they're backing, people like Villani, Bolton, Mooney, if they're backing those players to be up the order as their top four, and then you've got
your hitters coming in later,
Meg and Pez, and I think they definitely have a lot of people who could take up those top four spots. And I think they're Alex and Elisa Healy are two very unlucky people. I think for them, I would put them in my top four.
So you think Alex Blackwell and Elisa Healy will be down the order 6-7 coming in after the rest?
Yeah.
What they've done lately.
The way the top order's batting, they might not get a...
That's the way they've been, I think. So. Yeah.
What's Elise Villani like? She comes across as such a vibrant person and so outgoing. She's also, very talented batsman, done so well for the Scorchers. She's someone that probably could sort of fly under the radar but have a really strong World Cup.
Yeah, I think she's one of those people who, again, can take the game away. She'll hit the sweepers and then hit the big shot when she needs to, and she builds her innings like that. And I think the way that she approaches the game is that she doesn't want to think about it too much. She just wants to go out there and bat, and I think that's kind of the perfect mold that you want for one of your top order bats.
Yeah, you like that? Do you overthink the game? What's your approach to that sort of tinkering with your technique? And
I think whenever you go into a new season, you start to overthink everything. You go back to kind of square one. But I think with the way that, the female game is going, we are training more and, there's that less time of a break. So you're not really going back to square one. So there's time to kind of break your technique down, but also build on what you've already been working on.
Bales, I can't imagine you overthinking your technique too much.
Oh, I do. That's the problem, mate.
Different trigger movements all the time.
LBW every single time playing across my line.
So it's going to be a really big tournament. Australia's seven matches start on the 26th of June. The first game is against the West Indies at Taunton. And then fittingly, the final is at Lords on July 23rd. I think it's going to be a real red letter day for women's cricket, that final at Lords.
Top picks? What are you going for?
Well, that's what I wanted to talk about now. Who do I think will give Australia the biggest trouble? I mean, obviously the home side, England, look very strong. Heather Knight and Sarah Taylor at the top of the order. New Zealand won World Cup two World Cups ago, and they've been quite strong in the T20 game. I mean, those two really are the only two I can see winning it apart from Australia.
Yeah, I think New Zealand are the dark horse going into this. I think they've got some of the best all-rounders in the world, and But then, you know, West Indies, they're a very, very strong team.
Yeah, I'm just not sure the West Indies have it for the 50-over game. They seem to be better in the T20.
They might surprise you, though.
Yeah, I remember seeing Dotton smash the Sixers. DeAndre Dotton, the West Indies batsman, smashed the Sixers all over the place at North Sydney Oval, and spoke to her afterwards, and she was really strong. Like, she gives the ball a real whack. So New Zealand, though, have a good seam bowling attack.
Yeah.
So on the English wickets, they could be effective. The English team have a lot of pressure on them being at home.
I think they work well playing at home, though. They always, I think they always have a strong performance playing on their own, you know, home turf. So
I was looking at India because, I mean, obviously India came out here two summers ago and made pretty tough going for Australia. But then I was looking at their record in England. I think they've lost something like their last five ODIs on English deck. So maybe not. Australia does have a good record in England as well. You know, I think we've won the Ashes last summer over there, didn't we? I'm pretty sure names. Yeah.
Yes, we did.
And we did. Yep. Yeah. And we also, looking at it, I think there was something like one of the last four or something, last four ODIs over there as well. So Australia has a good record on those pitches. And I think it's probably fair to say the Australian women's team has a far better record in England than the Australian men's team. We seem to always compare that. No, that's true. But we seem to compare that every time the Ashes is on. We go, geez, the girls are going really good.
England are trying to say Australia are favourites to take the pressure off them. I think those two, with perhaps New Zealand, Australia, England, New Zealand, the winner will come from those three. Who's your tip, Naomi?
I'm
Australia.
I would love to see Australia win, but if I was to pick my second, I think it's going to be New Zealand.
So it starts this weekend. Can't wait. We'll be following the tournament throughout on the podcast, and hopefully we'll be talking about many famous Australian victories. All right, we're going to take a short break, and then we'll be back with Naomi Stallenberg.
Stalaken mid-wicket, pushing in closely.
Can she get it through that?
Oh no!
Disaster. Could be a run out. Oh, it's all over.
That's it.
It's all over. The Thunder have won.
Welcome back to the Australian Cricket Podcast. Menna's here with Scott Bailey and Naomi Stallenberg from the Thunder. And that was a very good memories for you, Naomi. That was when the Sydney Thunder won the initial WBBL. And it seemed like to me that when that happened, no one was really sure if the game was over yet. Did you guys know on the sideline that you'd won the WBBL?
We were kind of standing there watching and trying to figure out what just happened. But I think, like, we knew that, you know, the game was over. We'd gotten the runs, but we didn't know if we could run on the field. So we're kind of like just like standing there, jumping around, you know, looking at each other. And then, you know, a few of us started running on there. So, but special moment, unbelievable.
Yeah, memory you'll cherish forever, I imagine.
Definitely.
Now, I've got a quote here, Naomi, that I've taken from the Daily Telegraph. This is something you wrote. It has been nearly a year on from the announcement of the Women's Big Bash, and it's been a really crazy ride. Can you describe for the listeners what this crazy ride has been like?
Well, the journey is very full on. From start to finish of the WBBL, pretty much you finish your, well, it's going into a sandwich competition, but when you go from your state squad and then you go into your franchise, you pretty much only have like a week turnaround. So it's pretty much full on from there. You go straight into training and pretty much game mode, and you have to switch from one day cricket to 2020 straight away. So it's a very full on journey, but it's amazing.
And what's the change been like from, say, before the WBBL? I mean, you play the WNCL and then that was it. And now you've got a whole other competition to compete in?
Yeah, well, we used to play, so on the weekend of the rounds, we'd play a 2020, a WNCL game, and another 2020. So it was pretty much you just play for your state. And I'm glad that they've decided that, you know, they still see a lot in one-day cricket and we get to still represent our state, because that's what you pretty much dream of. But now you've got the excitement of the WBBL and you get to represent a franchise, and it's something new, it's something vibrant, something exciting. And
so the WBBL has been a huge success, but going into that first summer, what was the feeling like around the playing group? Was there some nerves that perhaps this wasn't going to take off? What was the feeling like of, because, you know, everyone was so uncertain and it was arranged so quickly. What was those first few moments like?
Well, with the chat going around, you know, no one really knew, because they said, oh, we're going to start it up, and no one really knew if it was going to happen. And then all of a sudden they were like, yep, it's happening. Pretty much get ready for the change. And it's just one of those things. It was the way that cricket needed to go, and definitely for the female game. But
were the players confident?
There were. I was going to say, I know for a fact there were a few players with some reservations about it, weren't there? They were concerned. Yeah. I mean, obviously, you were putting... Women's cricket obviously hadn't had the TV exposure at a domestic level, and all of a sudden you were expanding the number of teams, but giving it TV exposure at that point, there were a few players concerned, but obviously it's worked out gangbusters.
There were a few concerned people, but I think they had the men's game to look at. I think the BBL, the success that the BBL had, they had that to look at and think, yeah, I think, you know, we can definitely do this. And that's the way it went. And I think they'll
vindicated,
definitely happy.
One of
the
real
change.
Success stories of Australian cricket.
Yeah.
So how has this rapid growth changed the way you think about being a professional women's cricketer?
It's just rewarding. It's definitely rewarding, I think. Coming up through club cricket, going to play underage state cricket, and then being able to do this as a profession. It's unbelievable. Think about some people who've got normal jobs. They catch a train at work every day.
I bet some of your friends are jealous, envious.
I think they're all quite happy with what they're doing.
they see you training and getting up and running around laps.
Yeah, nah.
Going to bed early on a Saturday night.
Oh, that is definitely me, big grandma. But no, I've got a few friends who like teachers, accountants. They're all happy doing what they're doing, and it's just, it's always been my dream, and they know that. So yeah, I think the training's full on, but you love it. You get to go and run outside every single day and be working towards something.
Yeah, I mean, you're in the situation where you're part of the New South Wales team that is fully professional, sponsored by Lendlease.
Yeah.
And the Thunder. So what a great situation. I mean, full-time cricketer.
No, I was going to say, like, you spoke about the fact, obviously, that you won the first WBBL and how much that meant straight away to play for Thunder. But you've also won a few WNCL titles as well. Can you compare the two? Like, how do you compare winning that first WBBL to winning, you know, umpteenth straight WNCL?
Which is the 50-over.
Well, I honestly wish that you could be able to have that big celebration of, like, the WBBL for the WNCL. I think that there should be this big... The streamers come down and that kind of thing, play on the big grounds for the final. But unfortunately, we're not there yet. And it's like, it's a little bit heartbreaking, but being a part of the New South Wales Breakers, you know, 10 in a row, you know, I was there for, I think I've been there for 3 titles now. And yeah, it's unbelievable to see where the game's gone. And I honestly wish that the WBBL and the WNCL kind of had the same.
Yeah,
there wasn't such a big gap between the exposure.
Yeah,
no. I know, like, I've been to a couple of WNCL finals for the 50-over game, and the presentation is, like, it's the equivalent of you or I winning.
Great cricket, mate.
Yeah, like, it really is. Like, and I don't mean that in a rude way, but the reality is 2 teams line up, the captain comes up, takes the trophy, says, thanks, guys, it was a great game. There's no microphone, it's just and there's no backing or anything like that.
Yeah.
And the photo is done, you know, with Hurstville Oval in the background rather than the MCG or whatever.
To be fair, that's not a big gap from the Matador Cup.
No, that's true. That's true. But
so they're both in a
bit
more
position.
Well, I think they wanted the Matador Cup to be on the smaller grounds to have that presence of a crowd. So, but I think the Matador Cup is done a little bit, you know, more vibrant compared to the WNCL. They do try and get people at their games, whereas I don't know if we're doing enough to get people at our games.
Yeah, I remember being at the game where South Australia actually ended a streak, and that was at Hurstville, and it was kind of like, and it was a really good game of cricket. It was actually a great game of cricket to watch. You made a late charge from memory to try and get the win back for the Breakers, but the atmosphere there wasn't a hell of a lot different to what I see when I go down to Raby or whatever and watch, you know, first grade Campbelltown play first grade Penrith in women's cricket.
Yeah.
Whereas at least in the Matador Cup, the final has an atmosphere
about it. So going from that then, the WNCL, to what's been the Women's Big Bash, how have you coped with the extra pressure, the extra exposure, obviously media commitments? How's that been for you as a, you know, young woman growing up?
I enjoy that part of it. I would love for it to be the same across the boat, like, you know, both teams. I think if a little girl sees, you know, the New South Wales Breakers and, you know, they get really excited, I think that's just as good as seeing, you know, the Sydney Thunder, Sydney Sixers.
The young kids are really excited when they see you in your Thunder uniform. And
yeah, well, at the end of the day, we want more kids playing sport and more kids playing cricket.
But how has the extra attention affected you?
I think as an athlete, you're always going to, you know, suffer from a bit of pressure. I think the biggest pressure there is probably myself, you know, putting pressure on myself. So
you don't let outside pressures sort of affect you?
A lot of the time, if you're on a field and there's, you know, a big crowd, sometimes I don't really notice the crowd. I'm too indulged in the game,
invested, you're focused.
I find the opposition a bit more intimidating than the crowd.
what do you think of the media then? You know, media commitments, having to do interviews, all that stuff.
Well, I think that's the way that the game is going, and I think it's great that we have that implemented in our team and in our squad and, you know, around the whole competition. I think it's good.
Good. What do you think about the name change from the Southern Stars to the Australian Women's Cricket Team?
I think I like it, but then when I look at all the other sporting teams around Australia, they all have names. You know, you've got the Hockeroos,
Socceroos,
you've got the Opals, the Diamonds. They've all got names. And what about, like, why not change the men's team to have a name?
Well, the men's team does have a name. They're the Aussies. That is the official nickname of the Australian men's cricket team, is the Aussies. Aussies.
Really?
Yeah, that's bad. But you're right.
Like, we're the Southern Stars. I don't know. What
you're saying is, if I'm reading between the lines, you're not sure about it. Is that right?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm unsure about it.
What I think is, it has no heart to it. Like, the Australian women's cricket team is very formal. Yeah. And despite not getting into issues about gender and all this, just it's a very sort of, you know, very straight name. Whereas the Southern Stars had a brand to it.
Yeah, well, I think the idea was that the men were the Australian men, and they wanted it to be the same, the Australian women.
It's more professional, I guess.
Yeah, I think when they're talking about it like that.
Have any of the players talked about it, though?
Not since it's been changed.
Gnomes, when you were, say, 12 years old, 13 years old, and you started playing cricket and playing a bit of grade cricket, did you look at the Australian women's team as the Southern Stars? Did you identify with that as what you wanted to be, or did you see them as Australia?
I think it's always been the Australian team. I still probably call it the Australian team.
Yeah, Southern Stars is an affectionate nickname.
Yeah, I think so.
Now, there has been a change of the cricket laws so that they are more gender neutral. The he has been taken out of the laws, but many old terms stay. The new code will include an increased use of generic nouns like fielder and bowler, and use he/she when required. Now, Christina Matthews, the chief executive of the Wacker Cricket Association, said that words such as batsman, third man and 12th man disrespect half the population, and in my view, there's no common sense reason why the terms can't be changed. I think it's just something people have held on to. So, Naomi, as a female player, is this something that you think needs to be changed, or is it just something that media and campaigners like to sort of drum up to feel like they're boosting gender equality, whereas it's not a big issue? I mean, what? Give me a feeling of from a female player.
I think some people probably have a bit too much time on their hands to be thinking about this. I just want to play cricket. That's my bottom line. It's the way that society's gone.
Do you guys say to each other? Third man, do you go third woman down there? Or?
No, it's always been the third man is a fielding position. Yeah. It's like no man's land. Like, you know, like you.
You don't put gender on that title, do you?
12th man.
Well, doesn't jump out.
We wouldn't
being
really
sexist.
Say 12th man. We just say 12th, I think. And batsman. We've always, yeah. But third man's a fielding position. I don't really have a problem with that.
I think there's a lot of, from the outside perspective, I think there's a lot of things that need to be sorted as far as promotion of the women's game go before
like,
that's the priority.
Go to, you know, promoting the game instead of trying to change the rules. Like, I think it's just putting too much time and effort into the wrong thing.
Would that ever change too? Like, let's say, so they change these rules. Are you Are you personally, are you going to refer to it as a batter, whether it's a male or female player?
I don't know what I'm going to do, but I think Naomi's on to something that sometimes I think we get too involved in this stuff. But I think the way the world is moving, we'll slowly see these
eventually,
fade out.
I think, eventually.
And last question, Naomi, before I get you off the hot seat.
Yep.
The MOU discussion is very much in the news at the moment. You're part of the New South Wales Lend-Lease Breakers.
Yep.
What happens to you guys after June 30th? Do you still train, or is that it? Do you just, they lock the doors and you're out?
There was talk there was going to be a bit of a lockout, but at the moment we're still going to keep training. They don't want to stop any cricket, and I think that's the way it should be. You know, the MOU is getting sorted between Cricket Australia and the ACA, and they're the key stakeholders, you know, involved. So the players are going to keep doing, you know, keep doing business, and I think that's the way it should stay.
What about Kevin Roberts? He's been around speaking to all the players. He obviously spoke to you guys. How was that?
Yeah, I think it was just clarifying what their offer was. There wasn't a very long presentation.
There
wasn't much to it.
As a player, do you, like, in, obviously you're not over in England, mate, but do you pay much attention to it? Because I feel like the general public is kind of like, man, I'm over this. Like, as a player, do you actually pay a lot of attention to all this, or are you just interested once the final result is done?
I don't really want to think about it too much. I just want to worry about cricket. I think a lot of people are a bit like that, and I think that's the way it should be. We should just be worrying about what we're doing at training and on the park and in the nets, and that's our job. That should be our job. That's what we should be, you know, aiming for, and all the media behind it. I think it's just a big cloud, and it shouldn't be there.
Yeah, well, it's coming from both sides.
Yeah.
This podcast was part of the propaganda war. The ACA took my interview with Lisa Stelaker and wrote an article. So there you go.
Have you heard from CA about that?
No, I haven't, but that's all right. So thanks so much, Naomi. I'm really glad we got to talk to you about and give us an insight into what the women's game is like.
No worries. Thanks.
We're going to take a quick break, but before we do that, we've got the Have a Go Your Mug promotion. To go through the rules, if you leave a review on iTunes for the show or whatever app you listen to the show and then email me, you will go in the draw for a Have a Go Your Mug mug. I gave Naomi her mug. She's all ready for that one. If that is too complicated, you can sign up on Patreon for $5 a month or more and you'll get a mug straight away. So three entrants have gone in the mug this week. We've got Hangman, Steve, and Mike from Boston, my favorite place in America. Now, as Naomi is our guest, I'm going to get her to draw out the winner.
Hangman 1933.
And what has he written?
A really entertaining and informative podcast that all cricket followers should subscribe to. Well done, guys. Brilliant. I never miss it.
Thank you, Hangman, and send me your address and your mug will be sent out. Now, if you want to get in touch with the Australian Cricket Podcast, we're on Gmail, AusCricketPod, AUSCricketPod @gmail.com. That's also our Twitter and Instagram handle, @AusCricketPod. You can find us on Facebook as the Australian Cricket Podcast. And remember, if you've got any questions or feedback, send it in for our listener mail segment. And we'll be back in a moment with the final segment of What's Made Us Happy in the Week of Cricket.
Perry goes big on this occasion. Is it going to go all the way? Yes, it is. Listen to the crowd. Perry decides to go again. She's going to try and take on mid on, and she wins that as well. So a six at the start of the over. This time, a four. Advances again, and this one's through the covers. That's four more. What an over. Terrific exhibition of batting by Elise Perry.
Welcome back to the Australian Cricket Podcast. That was the world's best women's batsman in action, and that was Mel Jones and our very own Gav Joshi commentating. Now, we're going to end this week's show with what's made us happy in the week of cricket. Now, I'll start with you, Bales. What's made you happy in the week of cricket?
Loved seeing Mohammad Amir's spell against India on Sunday night in the Champions Trophy final. I mean, obviously, he's had his issues, Mohammad has, and he's had his detractors, but, geez, it was just a reminder of how good he can be, and you know, and he's still got such a long career ahead of him.
You got no reservations about him being, you know, banned for match fixing, fixing.
Like, obviously, it was very bad, but, and I'm not defending his actions for a second.
But you can forgive.
Yeah, I just think he was a 19-year-old kid at the time. I mean, he's done his time, and I'm not defending those actions for a second, but if you just look at his skill alone, the game of cricket is better for watching him bowl, because he just does some great things with the ball. And we saw that on Sunday against India.
Now, I've got two things that have made me very happy in the week of cricket. The first one is the just general buzz around this Women's World Cup. I just love the fact that it's getting more exposure, and you can just tell the growth from 4 years ago is amazing. And I think the Women's Big Bash League has been integral in that, in knowing so many of the Australian players, knowing so many of the foreign players that have come in, the imports. We had Harman Precour played for the Thunder, had Marizanna Kapp playing for the Sixers, all these great players that we now know we get to see in the Women's World Cup. So I think the growth in the last 4 years has been amazing. I mean, Naomi, you might be in the next World Cup in 4 years. Imagine then.
That's the dream.
That's the dream. But my thing that's made me happy this week, really happy, and it's a little bit towards yours, Bales, it's Virat Kohli being embarrassed in the Champions Trophy final. I mean, firstly, he gets dropped, and then he gets out the next ball. So he's effectively out two in two balls in the biggest one-day game of the year. The one thing about Virat, though, he was a good loser at the end of it. He was very gracious in complimenting the Pakistan side, but not so one Bollywood star, Kamal Khan. Now, I've got these tweets from Fox Sports, so thanks, Fox Sports. This is what Kamal Khan tweeted after India's loss. Number one, all the players of the Indian team should be banned by government from playing cricket because they have sold themselves and the pride of India. Virat Kohli should be banned from playing cricket for lifetime for selling pride of Indians to Pakistan. He should be behind bars. Now, that's pretty poor, isn't it? I mean, if you're going to get locked up for a failure in a one-day game.
Interesting statement.
And finally, he said, people should throw eggs and tomatoes on players at the airport when they return from London because they are real Deshdrohi who sold themselves. Now, I'm guessing that's an Indian swear word, so it might have offended a few people.
Well, don't you wish the Thunder supporters were that passionate?
Well, yeah.
So that's made me happy. So great win for Pakistan. India humbled. Virat Kohli embarrassed. Well, what more do you want?
Eggs and tomatoes.
Exactly. Well, Naomi and Scott, thanks so much for coming into the show this week.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been great.
Did you enjoy it, Naomi?
Yeah, no, I love talking about cricket. So.
Well, hopefully we'll get you back sometime. Maybe towards the end of the World Cup, we can have a chat again about it.
Yep, have me back. Definitely.
Thank you very much. Bales, thanks for coming in after the State of Origin.
That's all right. That's
Macca would never be here the day after such a late night. So you get full marks and you picked up Naomi. So
go the Blues.
Yeah, go the Blues indeed. All right. Thanks so much for downloading the show. I'll be back next week. We've got James Buckley and Rob Forsyth from AAP, the guy whose job you're after is cricket writer.
Don't say that.
And we'll be going through all the headlines. See you then.
What a marvellous stroke. He's played no better shot than that in the whole of the series.